Let me begin by just reminding you of TALAVEN, which, anathema to this topic of this conference, is the sum of the number of divisors of n. And so let's take this as an example. This is the divisor function, and we want to look at its summatory function, which I'll call dx, sum n up to x of tau of n. And this is equal to a main term plus an error term. And the main term is equal to, if I get it right, x times log x plus the constant times x, which is, yeah, it's okay. I have to confess that I cheated. I've got it right here. Yeah, and the question is, how small is the error? And so we know if in the first place, due to Dirichlet, that it's bounded by a constant times root x. And then, okay, I'll cheat. I was going to put these all under each other, but let's not. That it's bounded by x to the third was proved by Voronoi. And then later on, it was shown to be less than a smaller power of x, slightly less than a third. This was by van der Corbett. And then I'll put some dots, because there have been many small improvements in the value of delta since then, and that it's bounded by any power of x bigger than a quarter is the big question mark. The main term you can get just by, Dirichlet got the main term just by counting the lattice points in mn less than or equal x in the positive quadrant. That's how Dirichlet got it. And then being more fancy with the error term, you improve. And I'll get to that a little in a couple of lines, in a few lines. Okay, so the question mark is whether this holds, and this is known to be best possible because that the exponent cannot be less than a quarter, or even equal to a quarter, I guess, but let's say cannot be less than a quarter, and this was proved using ideas of I've forgotten who was actually first, but the main recognition is usually attached to Hardy. But I think it depends on ideas of Bohr and Landau as well. And the fact that this is best possible. Nobody knows how to prove that. Okay, now all the results from here on down, well, have come from an explicit formula due to Voronoi. So Dirichlet's method just involved counting these points and estimating the error using one little trick, which has been used a million times since and been named after a number of people since. And his Voronoi's formula was that the error term is explicitly given by minus 2 root x over pi times the sum n greater or equal 1 tau n over root n times a sum of two Bessel functions. The k1 Bessel function at the argument 4 pi root nx and the pi over 2 times the y1 Bessel function at the same place, at the same argument. You can't ask me what the definition of Bessel functions are. No, I don't think so. It's not. I'll be happy to talk with you. Well, is this always an integer when x is an integer? Oh, yeah, okay. You're right. It is an integer. And in fact, it's always an integer, whether x is an integer or not. But we're looking for an asymptotic formula for it, like we look for an asymptotic formula for the number of primes up to x, even though that's always an integer. Well, you pretend you're Archimedes and divide this up into squares and figure out how many squares are in there, and it's sort of like the volume. The area, thank you, Bill. Generalizations, all right. Okay, let me move on, because this lecture is really not going to get very far, I'm afraid, guys. why don't we just look and we'll see more generally where it comes from? What? Okay. patience. Okay, so this is the explicit formula. I'm cheating by a tiny fraction of something because this is the error term. It's only precisely the error term if we count this way, which tells us to take only half the term if x is an integer, as is common in Fourier analysis. Okay, so this Voronoi summation formula, as it's called, is actually reminiscent of the simpler formula due to the Poisson formula. Whereby, let's say we take some nice function that, let's say, looks like the characteristic function of an interval, for example, and we can count the number, this is counting the number of divisors up to, of integers up to x, and this is just counting the number of integers up to x, maybe with a smooth weight like f, maybe not, and then this is for then the integral of fu du plus twice the sum n greater or equal 1 integral 0 to x fu cos 2 pi mu du. And similarly, there's a formula for counting the tau function when it's weighted like this, just like there's a formula for counting the integers up to x when they're weighted by something nice and smooth like this. So this is a more complicated version of the same thing, and it leads you to things that are solutions of second-order differential equations. Okay, now, as we all know, since Riemann, that the Poisson formula is sort of in corresponds to the functional equation for the zeta function. And in the same way, the Voronoi formula corresponds to the functional equation for the square of the zeta function. The square of the zeta function, of course, is the generating Dirichlet series for that sum. And of course, this has a functional equation which is gotten from this one just by squaring both sides. So that's no mystery. So what am I write? Equals. Okay, so now we're going to consider this correspondence somewhat more generally. And so we're going to have an arithmetic function, which is just, of course, a sequence of complex numbers. And we want to estimate the summatory function, ax equals sum n up to x, an. If I write a sub n, it's because I'm used to doing it. It will mean the same thing. I'm bound to do it at least once. Okay. And we want to do this by looking at the generating Dirichlet series. A of s is the sum n greater or equal 1, an n to the minus s. And we need some properties for this. And now for the next little while, this is going to look a lot similar to the lecture given 2 days ago by Dr. Kuo. There's a certain amount in common with it. And we're going to make some assumptions about this. For every epsilon greater than 0, we'll assume an is bounded by n to the epsilon. And of course, this implied constant can depend on epsilon. And that means, in particular, hence A is holomorphic for real S greater than 1. Okay, and we're going to assume A has meromorphic continuation. To the complex plane C, and it's analytic except possibly apart from possible pole at S equals 1, possible pole of some order. And we're going to assume it's got a functional equation. We'll assume also a functional equation that's going to look, say, for real S greater than 1 is all we need. But in fact, in examples, it'll really have the functional equation hold throughout. A of 1 minus s is going to be given by w times gamma of s times b of s, where as usual, W is the root number. It's got a complex number of modulus 1. B of S is just going to be some Dirichlet series. Which also satisfies the Ramanujan type bounds, B of N bounded by N to the epsilon. And gamma of S is holomorphic for real S greater or equal to half. And in what we're really thinking of doing, the functions we're really interested in are products. I want the extra leeway because I want to give you an asymptotic expansion, a Stirling type expansion. Yeah, you could. But then let me just say the example. I'm going to give you what the functional equation looks like in the examples that we're really interested in. And if I absorb it in that, then I need to put it in the gamma. Okay, so we're really interested in products of zeta and Dirichlet L functions and maybe some automorphic L functions. And in particular, in the examples we're interested in, the gamma S, so we're going to assume this, at least at the start, that gamma S has the following form. It's pi to the minus m times d to the power s minus a half times a product j equals 1 to m of gamma of S plus kappa J over 2 times the inverse of the same thing at one with S replaced by 1 minus S . So our functions are good. The gamma S is going to be of this form. And later on we're going to have a somewhat we're going to need a more general version of this. Before I say that, let me just say for some integer, positive integer d, which is the conductor, and kappa j having real part, complex numbers with real part greater than zero, and these are called the spectral parameters. The sum of these, which actually won't enter into today's talk, but it's suggestive to say that this is known as the weight. And the number of these, m, is known as the degree. Yeah, I guess I want greater or equal zero. Thank you. Okay. The m is going to be an integer, and throughout we're going to assume m is greater or equal 2. And we have the following properties for sigma greater or equal a half, say, let's say t greater or equal 1. I could say t greater or equal 0, but the expression I'm going to look at, I'd need to alter it a little because I don't want to talk about 1 over 0. Omega, some complex number, some omega with and with Q, capital Q to be equal to 1 over 2 pi times the mth root of d. We have from Stirling formula that gamma of sigma plus IT is given by omega times QT to the power m sigma minus a half times QT over E to the power IMT times 1 plus something small. And I just want to write O of T inverse here, which is the only reason I said T was greater or equal 1. Otherwise, I could put T plus 1 here, I guess. And let me mention that there's a similar formula for this, because I've taken T to be positive. The formula is not gotten just by conjugation. It would be gotten by conjugation if these kappas were real, but because they're not, it doesn't. But the same formula works. And what we really need to make our proofs work is not this, but really just this. Okay. And so what do we expect of this summatory function that we're interested in? Where is it gone? Okay. So we expect this is equal to main term plus error term. And the main term for A of X is the residue at S equals 1 of the generating function A of S, X to the S over S, as usual. And of course, in many of the most important examples, that's 0. So there is no main term. Okay. And so, I want to just denote, I'm going to denote this residue by capital R of X. Okay, so our first result, which actually follows from our second result, but I'll state it first, is a formula which is essentially the same as one of the ones Dr. Quo mentioned. I think it is. It's a slightly different set of assumptions. Uh-huh. I'm not sure that how necessary that is, but I certainly need that for that. And maybe it's possible that I've forgotten. It's possible we can get rid of that. Oh no, omega is explicit. Omega is explicit, in fact, once we do this. And I'd have to look it up in the paper. It's right there if you really, I can tell you later. Just like Q is explicit, omega is explicit, but I didn't write it down in my notes. So we can't do that. Of AS, yes. It might be a multiple pole, but it's the only one. It's not the only term in the main term, because this has a singularity of 0, but that's smaller. Okay, so the first result, which I'll call theorem 1, which, as I said, is very similar to what Dr. Quo stated. If m is greater or equal to, then a of x is equal to r of x plus o of d to the 1 over m plus 1 x to the m minus 1 over m plus 1 plus epsilon. And here, this O depends on the following thing. It depends on epsilon, and it depends on the spectral parameters kappa 1 to kappa j, m occurring in the functional equation. And this is the best known, as far as that we know, in general from this. Now, as with the divisor function, where Voronoi deduced the result x to the 1/3, we deduce this result from a Voronoi-type formula. And, well, before I state it, let me just mention that we are going to assume that we're going to change this formula like one does with approximate functional equations and not just have a main term but something else instead. And that's what happened with the Voronoi formula. And the dual sum we're going to have is bxn, which is defined in terms of the second function, the dual function which occurred in the functional equation. So we have coefficients bn, and then we have n to a negative power, m plus 1 over 2m, is it? Yeah, 2m. Cosine of some thing, 2 pi m, nx over d to the power 1 over m, plus pi l over 4, where, let me just say, l is just written to save space on the blackboard. It's m minus 3 minus 2k. Oh, yeah, k did occur again. I'm sorry. That k is the sum of the kappas. Okay, so we define this dual sum, and then theorem 2 tells us... Yes, you're summing up to n. Capital N. Theorem 2 tells us for any... one less than or equal n, capital N less than or equal x, we have. So we can get an approximation of ax by something, which now involves this sum, and the larger the n we take, the closer the approximation we get. So the precise statement is that ax equals this residue plus the original W times pi m to the minus a half times capital D to the 1 over 2m times x to the power m minus 1 over 2m bxn. Period. And there's an error term somewhere. Oh, this can't be right. Isn't there an error term in here? Yes. Conveniently missing. Well. Plus O. This is horrible. Okay, I'll go to the next board. Plus O of, I don't have it here, do I? D, as I said, it gets more accurate as N gets larger. D to the 1 over M, capital N to the minus 1 over M, X to the M minus 1 over M plus epsilon. And this O, again, depends on epsilon. And let me just write kappa as a vector of the constants kappa 1 to kappa n. So that's the statement. And then to go from, to get theorem one from theorem, oops, nope. To get theorem one from theorem two is immediate, just as it is in the case of Voronoi's with the divisor function, because these b's have those coefficients little b in them, and one of our assumptions was that the little b's satisfied the Ramanujan strength bound, and if you just use the trivial bound for the cosine and you choose m optimally, which is this I do have, hopefully I've got the rest, equals d to the 1 over m plus 1 x to the m minus 1 over m plus 1, which with the trivial bound for the little b's equates this one with this one. You just want to equate this error with this error. And you, for this, you just use the trivial bound. Okay, so I don't know if it's worthwhile to sketch the proof of this. I think I'm just going to, I'll do real fast. So sketch theorem two. Okay, so AX is a contour integral, as usual. Plus small, and alpha is 1 plus epsilon. Oops, no, time to go this way, isn't it? Okay, so you shift contour, and we're going to go, so we're starting on this line segment to the right of 1, where there may be a pole or there may not. Here's 0, so this is 1 plus epsilon, and that's alpha, and we're going to shift to, here's 0, we're going to shift to 1 minus alpha, which is minus epsilon. So it's just to the left of 0, so that you're going to get the residue at 0, at 1, plus you're going to get, because of this s in the denominator, you're going to get a of 0, which is not too big because of the functional equation tells you what it is at 0. It's bounded by, I have written q to the m over 2. So that's going to be small. And then we have 1 over 2 pi I times the integral 1 minus alpha minus it to 1 minus alpha plus it. And then plus small. We have the horizontal integrals, which are small because of our bounds, our absolute convergence, our functional equation, and our and the convex fragment window of convexity principle. And this integral then is what we're left with, and by the functional equation, so by the functional equation, we can write this, and this integral becomes w over 2 pi I, and we have gamma s, b of s, x to the 1 minus s over 1 minus s ds. And now I've taken the functional equation. Oh, God, it's long gone. But oh, there it is at the top. But I've also replaced, in A, I've replaced s by 1 minus s in doing this, because I've written bs gamma s. So I've replaced s by 1 minus s, and that means I've put this back at alpha, which is bigger than 1. And alpha is bigger than 1. And B of S is, because of this Ramanujan type bound, that's whole, this is absolutely convergent in this region. So this is an absolutely convergent series in this region, and we can just expand it. And so this whole thing becomes, when we expand it, wx times a sum, n greater or equal 1, bn c of nx. And c of y is equal to, well, let me use this space, c of y is equal to 1 over 2 pi I times the integral alpha minus it to alpha plus it of gamma s over 1 minus s times y to the minus s ds. So that's what the coefficient is here. And now, I'm going to really wave my hands and say, if n is large, c of nx is small, and so we can truncate to get a finite sum here, and that's what's going to come up here, except it's in a much nicer looking form. The terms have cosines in them, not this ugly integral, and the way you get the cosines out of it is for each term using the stationary phase method on the integral. And that allows you to pull out that as a main term. Okay. So that's the hand waving. So this part, the last part, requires some work. All lemmas are in Titchmarsh. Okay, now I want to state in particular the cases where we're most interested. And I can see. And the cases we're most interested in are m equals 2 and m equals 3. In case m equals 2, then theorem 1 tells us that sum n less than or equal x an is rx, the main term, plus o of d to the 1/3 x to the 1/3 plus epsilon. And the case m equals 3, we get the same thing, except we get an error term d to the 1/4 x to the half plus epsilon. And one can conjecture, if one wants, conjecture that this bxn is small. Bxn is less than everything to the epsilon. Let's see, dnx to the epsilon. And if this is true, then the conjecture, just again by choosing optimally, the conjecture implies that ax equals rx plus o of, let's see, d to the 1 over 2m x to the m minus 1 over 2m plus epsilon. And yeah, you just take n large and the remainder goes to 0 and you're just left with this stuff. So there's nothing to look at, really. Okay, now notice that the Riemann hypothesis for the function we're dealing with using the standard arguments, if we have the Riemann hypothesis, we have the Lindelof hypothesis, we can move the contour and estimate things very nicely. And then we get plus O of D to the half, I guess it is, X to the epsilon. So, no, I'm sorry. That's wrong. It's D to the epsilon X to the half. Of course, it's X to the half. X to the half. Okay. The conjecture beats this. So this is stronger than the Riemann hypothesis in this sense. So what we're interested in is getting, oh, let me start with this lower board. Want the exponent of x to be less than a half. Okay. Because that's what happens in the Riemann hypothesis case. We get a half. So if this conjecture were true, we'd have this for all m. M equals 2 is okay. I think so. M equals 2 is okay. M greater or equal 4, we declare to be hopeless. So that leaves us with M equals 3. So for M equals 3, we just miss beating it. For M equals 3, we just miss. But this is very like Voronoi's argument, you know, where you get a third for the divisor function. But then if you're van der Korput, you can estimate, as long as you have the second theorem, which has the series in it, you can try to estimate the exponential sums that occur in here non-trivially. And just like you do with van der Korput to go below a third, you can try and do it here to go a little below a half. Try to use exponential sums, exponent pairs method, let's say. Well, exponential sums, bounds. Let's not say exponent pairs because it depends on which case you're looking at. what exponential sum techniques work. Okay, now as I said some time ago when I stated the theorem, we can't do this in general. But we can do it in some important special cases. And so let me mention theorem 3, a special case where we can do this. Theorem 3, well, let me first define the function. We'll take AF to be the product of three Dirichlet L functions. And so we'll take chi j to be a primitive Dirichlet character modulo D sub J, and we'll let D be the product of the three conductors. And then our third theorem, theorem 3, is that this sum, the summatory function, so we're taking the sum over all triples n1, n2, n3 up to x, and we're multiplying chi 1 n1. So that's wrong in my notes too. Chi 2 n2, chi 3 n3. And then this is equal to the residue, so it's, I don't need to write it down. You know what the residue of this function times x to the s over s at s equals 1 plus the error term we got is d to the 38 over 75 x to the 37 over 75 plus epsilon. Well, just think how happy you'd be if you could prove that the zeros were all less than or equal, had real part less than or equal 0.49. Okay, just kidding. So here D is this product, as I said, and the main feature of this result is that 37 over 75 is less than 1/2. And the proof of this uses the method of exponent pairs to bound non-trivially the sums that are occurring in here. And those methods, unlike the theorem 2, which just depended on having a functional equation and not much else, the methods that you use to treat these series vary from problem to problem, and most problems you won't be able to do it. All triples of positive integer whose product is less than equal to x, yes. So it's like the divisor function is the product of two integers up to x. Okay, now let me just mention the case D equals 1. So then that means all of these D's are 1, and that means you're talking about the cube of the zeta function, and that means you're talking about the sum n less than or equal x tau 3 of n, which is the number of ways of writing n as the product of three integers. This formula exactly, this theorem 3, is due to F.V. Atkinson with exactly this exponent. So this is a generalization of, and it appeared in the year 1941. And so we dedicate the paper to Atkinson and we send it to the Canadian Journal, which I probably shouldn't say because it hasn't been accepted yet. But now, I also want to mention, oh, I'm really falling behind, let me just mention something else. I want a slightly different sum. It's a little more general, and let me just say sometimes on the functional equation takes you from zeta, from A of S to a combinations of more than one dual function, more than one dual series. More than one series on the right. So an example of this comes from Eisenstein series for congruence groups where you have more than a bunch of cusps, many cusps, or more than one cusp. And another example where this occurs, is when you look at derivatives of L functions. Well, you have AS is not equal to BS. It's equal to a sum of series or a combination of them. So let me give you an example of this. Example, if you take the derivative of an L function, then L prime of a Dirichlet L function, then L prime of 1 minus S chi is equal to minus W times gamma of S times L prime S chi minus W gamma prime S L S chi. So you just take the functional equation for the Dirichlet series and you differentiate it. So this gives you two things. Gamma prime, it's not quite of the same form, though, as gamma prime is not a product of gamma functions. But it does have a... But you can get a Stirling-type asymptotic formula for gamma prime. And the main term you get is just what you get by, of course, by differentiating the main term in the Stirling formula for gamma. And as I mentioned near the beginning, for our proofs of this type of formula to work, we actually didn't need the precise form we had. What we used was that asymptotic formula, which was over here. Well, yeah, what do you know? That's unusual luck. We use that type of formula. Now, the reason this is, so as a result of this, we can use this to get theorems like the following. I'm going to just leave that line on. So, example, we get theorem 4. Example, where is it? Chi 1 mod d1, chi 2 mod d2, Dirichlet primitive, Dirichlet characters, and let's take AS equals, well, I'll stick a minus sign in there, minus the first L function times the derivative of the second L function, And let's write this as the sum n greater or equal 1 a n n to the minus s. And so a n is the I'll write it. And I'm a little low on time, but I know I started 3 minutes late. Just what you wanted to hear, right? The sum over the products n1, n2 equal to n of chi1, n1, chi2, n2, log of n2. And it was to get rid of the minus sign here that I put the minus sign there, of course. And for this series, we can now evaluate a series of this type. We can get an asymptotic formula with a good error term. We get the sum. Well, this is a lot like the earlier theorem. We don't use exponent pairs. We're just going to get, and this is like a degree 2 L function, except one of them's a derivative. And so what we get is going to be a lot, look a lot like this. It's the residue of that AS at x to the S over S at 1 plus an error, which is d1 d2 times x all to the third x to the epsilon. Okay, now I've got, and the point here, again, is the power of x is less than a half. Now, I've got 5 minutes to tell you why we did all this. We were looking at the... we were looking at primes in short intervals. So if we look at psi x, that's the sum of the von Mangold function up to x. That's equal to x plus O of x to the half plus epsilon on the Riemann hypothesis, or Lindelof, if you'd rather. Riemann. Not there. This guy's got something in the bottom. Okay, and from this you get that psi x minus y is equal to y plus O of x to the half plus epsilon. So this gives you the asymptotic formula for primes in short intervals as long as y is greater than x to the half plus epsilon. And nobody knows how to do better. Unconditionally, we know from Hoheisel, we can get y equals x to the 1 minus delta for some delta and get an asymptotic formula. And from Huxley and refined by Heath Brown, we know most recently that y equals x to the 7 twelfths for the asymptotic formula, although we can do somewhat shorter if we only ask for the existence of these primes, not the asymptotic formula. So now it's known that if one makes the ridiculous assumption that there exists Ziegle zeros, there exists Ziegle zeros, or exceptional zeros of L functions, or exceptional Dirichlet characters, then Heath Brown was able to show quite some time ago that this implied there exist infinity of twin primes. And we were looking at the problem of taking this ridiculous assumption, which nobody believes, but nobody has disproved, and see what other problems we could say something about. And it turns out we were able to say things about the existence of primes in arithmetic progressions. and about the existence of primes in short intervals. And again, it's under a ridiculous assumption, so it's not a theorem that's ever going to get you a raise in pay, but we were able to prove the following asymptotic formula for this, that this is equal to the expected plus times 1 plus O of L1 chi times log x to a big power, r to the r, where r is, I really want to keep this theorem, but I guess I'm not gonna, where r equals some big number, 18,290, can be improved, and x to the 39 over 79 is less than y is less than x, and x greater equal d to the r. Okay, so here's the theorem. And this theorem is, as I said, useless because everybody knows that L1 chi is bigger than, say, 1 over log x, 1 over log d. And if x is d to a power, this is just like log d to a power. So that's useless. Chi is the real primitive character modulo d. No, I don't care. The theorem's useless if it doesn't have a z equals 0. Okay? So, chi primitive mod d, I guess real. Well, otherwise, any character, any primitive character to any modulus, this is a true theorem. You just throw all the junk in and pull out L1 as a common factor, and you're throwing so much away. This is, in real life, this is a very large power of log x. This is a useless theorem. But it could be that, it could be if these things exist, and then you get in wide ranges, you get the asymptotic formula when y is less than root x. And actually, this 39 over 79 is, it's a little better. It's this. But we wanted to remove the epsilon. Okay. In large range, short intervals, large ranges, anywhere near, anywhere remotely near the z equals 0. And there's similar theorem for arithmetic progressions. Now, how this comes about is, well, I really don't have time to tell you, but let me tell you that in order to prove this, eventually we needed this theorem, which set the limit, and this was a product of three L functions. Two of them are the zeta function, and one of them is the primitive character, the L function for the primitive character. We needed this theorem for this L function with something less than a half, but it's more comfortably less than a half than that one. And finally, we needed this original theorem for zeta s times ls. So that's how we got into this business. And I should say, for this formula, Vackinson has since been improved using very complicated things over the years, exponential sums in a gazillion variables. Klesnik, I think, holds the record. But so I'm sure that these results can be quantitatively improved, but of course the really the only interest, since this will never arise in real life, the only interest is that we can go below a half, I think. Okay, thank you.